Chapter 16. Freedom is slavery. Slavery is freedom. Winston did not know how much time had passed, but he knew that things were a little easier now. He still had to lie flat on the bed, but he was not tied to it so tightly. The dial was rarely turned up very high. Also, he knew that if he avoided giving stupid answers, O'Brien would not turn the dial at all. "There are three stages which you have to go through," O'Brien said. "You have to learn, then understand, and then accept. You have gone through the learning stage. It is time for the second stage. Do you remember writing in your diary, 'I understand how, I do not understand why'? You repeated it after you had read part of Goldstein's book."
"Have you read the book?" asked Winston.
"I wrote it," said O'Brien. "At least I was one of the writers. No book is written by one person alone."
"Is what the book says right?" asked Winston.
"The book describes how the party controls everything and everyone correctly," replied O'Brien. "But the plan it describes is nonsense. The proles will never start a revolution. No one will ever overthrow the party. The party will rule forever." He came closer to the bed. "Now let's think. You understand how the party stays in power. Now give me your answer to the question, why does the party want to be in power?"
"For our own good," said Winston.
Suddenly he felt pain through his whole body as O'Brien moved the lever up.
"That was a stupid thing to say, Winston," he said. "You should know better by now. Now I will tell you the answer," he continued. "The party does not rule over you for your own good. Rulers or parties who take over countries usually say they want people to be happier, or they want to protect the weak from the strong, or they want everybody to be free and equal. They believe or want to believe that they will give power back to the people when they have done these things. But we are different. We just want power. Forever. You know the party's slogan, 'Freedom is slavery,'" he went on. "Have you ever thought that we can change it to 'Slavery is freedom'? One person who is free can never win on his or her own, because in the end, every human being dies. But a person who lets the party control him or her completely is the party. This person will be free. He or she will never really die, because the party will live forever. It has power over everything, over matter in all its forms, over the body, and, most importantly, over the mind." Winston forgot the dial again. He tried to sit up, but could not. "But you can't control matter," he cried. "You can't control the weather, or diseases, or death. You can't control the laws of nature. The earth existed for millions of years before there were men."
O'Brien just waved his hand as if what Winston said was unimportant, and continued, "We control matter because we control the mind. Reality is inside your head. Forget what you have learned about history. The earth is only as old as the human mind. Things like the bones of dead animals in rocks were all invented in the 19th century. The stars are just bits of fire a few kilometres away. The party could put them out if it wanted to. Of course, it is also useful sometimes to say the stars are thousands and thousands of kilometres away, but that is why we have doublethink." Although Winston knew that what O'Brien was saying was nonsense,
As usual, there was nothing he could do or say against the force of this man who was not only mad, but also intelligent. As Winston listened, he felt as if he was getting smaller and smaller. He felt helpless.
"But all of this is not important," said O'Brien. "The real power we have to fight for is not power over matter, but over people."
He paused, and then, sounding like a schoolteacher, he asked, "How does one man get power over another one, Winston?" Winston thought about this, then he answered,
"By hurting him and by making him fear being hurt again."
"Yes," replied O'Brien, "by making him afraid. Power is in making people afraid. Power is in tearing minds to pieces and putting them together again in new shapes. In the world we are creating, there will be only fear, anger, and hate. There will be no love between child and parent, and between man and man, and between man and woman. There will be no love except love of Big Brother. There will be no culture and no science, but there will always be power. If you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot kicking a human face forever."
He paused as though he expected Winston to speak, but Winston could not say anything. His heart seemed to be frozen.
O'Brien went on, "You are beginning, I can see, to realize what the world will be like. But in the end, you will do more than understand it. You will accept it, welcome it, become part of it."
Winston managed to speak.
"You can't succeed," he said weakly.
"Why not?"
"I don't know," said Winston. "You will fail. Something will defeat you. Life will defeat you."
"But we control life, Winston," replied O'Brien. "So what will defeat us?"
"I don't know. People, humans."
Suddenly, Winston was no longer tied to the bed.
"Get up," O'Brien said. "Imagine that you're the last man against the party. You are the last example of a human. You will see yourself. Take off your clothes."
Winston untied the bit of string that held his overalls together, and they fell off. Beneath his overalls were dirty, torn pieces of his underwear, which he removed. He saw that there was a mirror at the end of the room and approached it, then stopped, hearing himself cry out.
"Go on," said O'Brien. "Stand in front of the mirror, and don't forget to look at yourself from the side as well."
Winston had stopped because the horrible sight of his body shocked him. Then he moved closer to the mirror and looked at his face. He could see the bones under the lined grey skin. He had very little hair. The skin of the rest of his body was grey too, and under the dirt he could see red wounds. But the truly frightening thing was how thin he was. He could see all his bones, and his legs were so thin that his knees were wider than his thighs. From the side, he could see that his back was bent as if his head was too heavy for his body. O'Brien got hold of Winston's shoulder and pulled him round so that they were face to face.
"Look," he said. "Even your hair is coming out."
He pulled out a handful of hair and showed it to him. "Now open your mouth," he continued. "How many teeth did you have when you came to us? You've only got 11 now, and these are falling out of your head. Look here." He got hold of one of Winston's front teeth between his powerful thumb and first finger. Pain went through Winston's jaw as O'Brien pulled the loose tooth out. O'Brien threw it across the room.
"Now turn round and look into that mirror again," O'Brien said. Do you see that thing in front of you? That is what the last man looks like. If you are human, that is what being human looks like. Now, put your clothes on again.
As Winston slowly pulled on his clothes, he felt old and weak, and suddenly very sorry for himself. He fell onto a small chair, and tears started to fall. He cried and cried. O'Brien put a hand on his shoulder, almost kindly.
"It will not last forever," he said. "You can escape from it when you choose to."
"You made me like this," cried Winston.
"No, Winston, you did it to yourself when you decided to act against the party," said O'Brien. "You have seen your body. Your mind looks the same. We have beaten you."
Winston had stopped crying. He thought of Julia. He had confessed everything about their relationship. He had told them everything he knew about her, but he had not stopped loving her. He looked up at O'Brien.
"I have not betrayed Julia," he said.
O'Brien looked down at him thoughtfully.
"No, that is perfectly true," he said. "You have not betrayed Julia."
"Tell me," Winston said, "how soon will they shoot me?"
"You're difficult," said O'Brien. "It might take a long time to make you love the party, but don't give up hope. Everyone is cured sooner or later, and in the end, we will shoot you."